this is Bob Hostetler, and this is day two of nonfiction writing, A to Z, all you ever wanted to know and do in nonfiction, day two. So let me begin by asking those who, thank you for coming back. I was afraid nobody would. Very quickly, just for a couple minutes, any follow-up questions from yesterday, if you can remember? Any follow-up questions from what we covered yesterday? If not, we'll get started. All right. So what I'm sharing with you today is we're still talking about short-form fiction. Tomorrow we will dive into book writing and selling a nonfiction book. And the primary selling tools for nonfiction books are one-sheets, which you use exclusively at writers' conferences. Almost never is a one-sheet you sent through email or anything like that, except as a follow-up. But the one-sheets, which I taught on in the pre-conference session, are for handing to an editor or agent at a writer's conference. But then there's also book proposals. And those are usually a 40-page or so document, which I'll show you an example tomorrow, and I'll tell you the essentials of book proposals. And then before we close, God willing, I will give you a path for how to market what to do first, second, third, fourth in selling, marketing your book to an editor, publisher, or agent. So, but today we're still going to swim in the short form circles, though this first bit that I'm going to share with you does have application for actually everything that you produce as a nonfiction writer, whether it's your book proposal or your query, or your one sheet, or your website. And that is what I consider one of the most neglected and or misused portions of a nonfiction writer's work. And that is, every time you send a query or and I'll talk tomorrow about the essential parts of a query, or a one sheet or a book proposal, you include an author blurb or section. It's also often what appears on the back cover of your book. And yet, in my experience, most of us as writers kind of forget how to write when it comes to writing about ourselves, our author section. So I'm going to give you a few tips and just a quick little exercise that I hope will indicate to you. It's so important that your author section of a book proposal or of a one sheet or the author paragraph of a query or of back cover copy be as artful as the rest of your writing. Okay, and so the first thing, and what I find is that people don't put their best foot forward when they write their author section. They try to be falsely modest, or they just, we freeze up. We forget how to write. So job one in putting your best foot forward in writing an author blurb or paragraph or section is to redefine your bio as a why me paragraph. Don't think of this thing, this author section, as a bio. That'll hurt you. That'll freeze you up. That'll trip you up. Think of it as a why me. All right? Because in a bio, you put your educational qualifications, your accomplishments, you think resume. Don't think resume. Okay? It's not a resume. It has nothing to do with the resume. It's to answer the editor or agent's or reader's question, why you? Why would I read what you produce as opposed to what Max Lucado produces?
Yeah.
Right? So it's the why me paragraph. So redefine it. Don't ever say bio again, please. It's not a bio. Author section, yes. Author blurb, yes. But most importantly, it's a why me. All right? Number two is leave out the wrong words. Mark Twain famously said, writing is easy. You just write down all the words you know and then cross out the wrong ones. Right? So leave out the wrong ones. The wrong ones are only, you know, she only has only one book. She has only done this. He has only. Leave that out. All that self-limitation language are some of the things you leave out. Also, there are some ways you put things in a bio or in an author section that don't give the right impression. You know, very often I'll get a book proposal which lists everything a person, every article, every devotion, every letter to the editor a person has ever produced. And you think that by listing 20 items in your credits that you're looking good. You're not. You're looking like an amateur. Because a professional says, yeah, I've done this, that, and this other thing, and a few things more. Right? We don't list everything because it's too much to list. That's the impression you want to leave. So, and I'll give you an example in a few moments, what I mean when I say wrong words. Number three is tailor your why me paragraph or section to the specific, that's a typo, it should say work. Another thing is correct all the typos, even in your PowerPoints. But tailor it to the specific work it is pitching or supporting, okay? So if you're writing it a why me blurb or paragraph for an article on parenting, you might mention your family. But if you're writing a piece, bless you, if you're writing a piece on Christian discipleship, you might not mention your kids, right? It's tailored to the specific work you're pitching or supporting. And then number four is use publishing credits wisely. Again, you're not going to list them all. And as I mentioned, I think yesterday, putting your best foot forward means putting the best spin on what you already have. Okay, so some of us have not published widely or broadly or deeply, right? That's okay. There is a way to communicate what you have done or are doing in a way that presents yourself professionally. See, the thing about your author, your whole proposal or your whole query or your whole one sheet is it's all in the style, the wording, the professionalism with which you present information. All right? So let's look at, and then number five. You want to always, with your why me paragraph, give the impression, I could say more, but modesty prevents me. Or the volume of all my accomplishments prevents me, right? You don't have time for me to go on. That's the impression you want to leave, because that's how professionals do it. They just give you the highlights and leave all the other details out. They're there if someone asks. Right? But you can leave out the rest. So, real quick, we're going to do a quick workshopping here, just for about 5 to maybe 10 minutes. This is the sort of thing I see often in queries, in one sheets, and in book proposals for an author section, okay? First of all, the author section is always third person, so this is first person, but we'll go there with this person. I've been a pastor's wife, mother, and homemaker for 40 years, and though I've never published a book, my husband read my manuscript and gave it to a pastor friend who also loved it. He said it should definitely be published. The group of pastor's wives I meet with every Tuesday And my weekly Bible study said the same thing. I was even asked to share some of my experiences at my mother-in-law's church in Poughkeepsie. I earned a bachelor's degree in German from Peninsula Bible College, while also working as a waitress to help my husband earn a seminary degree. The only writing I've done has been for my church newsletter over the last 17 years. However, I once had a letter to the editor appear in the newspaper and sold a devotion to the Upper Room in 1985 for $7. All right. So, if you were to rewrite that into a why me, what are some of the changes you would make to this copy? How would you say it differently?
Well, in keeping with your instructions, if remove the wrong words, I would start getting rid of phrases like, although I've never published a book.
Right. So she says, I've never published a book. You don't say that. And you don't say, where was the only?
The only writing
I've done. Yeah, you don't say that. Yes, Pam?
I would say writer with a passion for God.
Writer with a passion for God. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's too many helping verbs in there. It makes it passive rather than active.
Say it again.
There's too many helping verbs in there.
Too many helping verbs, yeah. Yeah. Mike?
I think I'd start by Mark Twain and take 50% of the
Yeah.
Work on the rest.
Trim it, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, yeah.
Contributor to Upper Room.
Contributor to Upper Room. Absolutely.
For $7.
I don't need to know $7. I don't need to know 1985.
You already spent the $7.
Yeah, that's right. It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone. Long gone. Right. Okay, so let me show you what. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. She said, I would remove the part about working as a waitress to help my husband. Yes?
She could say that she has a manuscript that's tentatively titled. Include that.
Yeah, there's no title in there.
All the other stuff about the husband and pastors.
Right, and we don't know what she's actually pitching and how this relates to it. Exactly, yes.
I would trim out the fluff about all these people like it and condense it down to say, I have tried it in some groups and it worked well.
Exactly right. Did you hear that? She said, I would condense all that stuff and say, I've tried it in various groups and it's worked well. Something like that, yes.
Should it be third person or first person?
Third person, always third person. In fact, in a one sheet or, not in a query, but in a one sheet or book proposal, everything is third person. It's about the author has done this, has been there. Third person, not first. In a query, is first person like this. Okay. All right. So, great seeing everyone. Great suggestions. So, taking just what the information that's in this and adding the project, as Judd said, this could be a way to put her best foot forward. 40 years of heartache and happiness from seminary days to senior pastor's wife, have supplied the hard-earned wisdom I share in Don't Get the Paper in Your Nightgown and More Wisdom for Pastor's Wives. The book's insights have already entertained and helped pastor's wives, churches, and Bible study audiences as I've spoken on this topic around the country. Because Poughkeepsie is around the country. Right. In addition to being a longtime columnist for the Bell Tower, do you remember what the Bell Tower? It's her church newsletter, right? We don't have to know it's a church newsletter. We might assume, but it doesn't matter. See, because she's writing professionally now. In addition to being a longtime columnist for the Bell Tower, my writing has also appeared in the Upper Room and the Cincinnati Enquirer. My writing has appeared, right? Doesn't matter that it was a letter to the editor. It doesn't matter that it was for $7, right? Is that Mike's, yeah. Well, they'll hang up soon, I hope. So, do you see what I mean? Yes.
So some of this revised copy borderlines on the truth.
Okay, the comment was some of this borderlines on the truth. Or stretching the truth?
Stretching.
Uh-huh.
Like around the country. As far as we know, really is not true.
Oh, it is true. She's presented this stuff in her hometown and Poughkeepsie around the country, right?
Okay.
All right. So what I'm suggesting you do, I'm not suggesting you even stretch the truth, but that you put your best foot forward and put a professional shine on the facts you have, right? Yes.
So where's the line from the professional shine to when it becomes stretched?
The line is if you can defend it comfortably to an editor or someone who asks. Now, I've never had anyone ask what the Keystone thing is doing there. No, that's not what I was going to say. I've never had anyone ask, and nor have I ever asked anyone, oh, what's the bell tower? Oh, what was it that appeared in the Cincinnati Enquirer? I've never asked that because it doesn't matter. What matters is this is good writing. All right? She has the ability to leave out the wrong information and put in the best information with the right emphasis. Okay? That's what professionals do, is they put in the right words, leave out the wrong words, and put their best foot forward. Now, if you can't defend it, so if it, to Dave's point, it could be that an editor or agent might say to her, so around the country, what are you talking about? If I were in her shoes, I would say unapologetically, well, in my little hometown as well as in Poughkeepsie, New York, and I hope to expand that soon to other places, right? So, but I did get around a little bit. So it's if you would be embarrassed defending it, explaining it, then don't say it that way. Say it another way. All right.
And if you're embarrassed, then maybe you shouldn't be writing for...
Well, yeah. If you're embarrassed, then give different... But, and remember, the Cincinnati Enquirer reference is a letter to the editor. Well, that's fair. There's nothing to be embarrassed about writing a letter to the editor, right? But I promise you, every editor I know, every acquisitions editor, every agent that I know will read something like this and say, cool. All right. Now, it's different, for example, when you go in the marketing section of a proposal where you talk about your influence and your reach and so on. That's where it would become clear that your speaking experience has been modest, but it's growing, right? So I don't, thanks Dave for that, because I don't want to give you the impression that I'm saying lie or even stretch the truth. I'm saying put your best foot forward. Find a way to say professionally what you have to offer. Okay? And that relates to what you're doing, because now that we know that the thing she's pitching or talking about is don't get the paper in your nightgown and more wisdom for pastor's wives. Oh, then that 40 years of heartache and happiness, those seminary days, the senior pastor's wife, I don't need the waitress part, but I know that she has hard-earned wisdom that goes into this. It relates to what she's done. And it also, at the end, gives me a little indication that she speaks and writes a bit. And that's enough. Because the professional says, I could say more, but modesty prevents me. Or volume prevents me. Yes, there was a question. Dave, yeah.
So I'm just confirming this, that I have great professional things that happen.
Right.
But they're irrelevant to what I'm doing now, except the only relevance is they may be the person that I am.
Good, good. So the comment was, for the recording, the comment was, I have great accomplishments I could cite, but they don't relate to the work I'm pitching other than they made me who I am. So in such a case, I might gloss them. So I might say, you know, Bob Hostetler is a former astrophysicist who is now writing romantic suspense, right? But I wouldn't do much more detail than that. If it doesn't relate to the work I'm pitching, gloss it. Okay? Pardon me? Yes, that's right. In both, I needed chemistry of a different kind. Oh, yeah, good call. Yes. A query. Thank you for that. I'll be going more into that tomorrow morning, but just real quickly. A query is a letter or an email, one-page letter or short, the equivalent of one-page email, that is sent to or handed to an editor or agent to interest them in what you're pitching. Okay? So it's, and I'll give you the essential elements of it tomorrow, but it's always short. But it needs to have a hook, some nuts and bolts in it, and your why me in it. So that's why I'm touching on this now. Okay, moving on from there. Let's talk about article writing, because if you remember yesterday, I put up a screen of various kinds of writings available to the nonfiction writer, right? And so some of those are greeting cards. I had a great short discussion about greeting cards yesterday. It might be advertorials or annual reports or that sort of a thing, as well as devotions and so on. So I'm going to touch on just maybe a dozen different kinds of article writing, many of which you probably are neglecting, maybe have never tried, but I hope you will after this. Okay? So, kinds of articles to consider. The news or issue article. This is Josh McDowell and I co-authored this around the time or sometime after our book, The New Tolerance, was released. This is an article about how much of the political correctness in our discourse is meant to silence people whose views they don't want to hear, right? Including Christians. And so here's one example of a news or issue article, all right? And of course, every article has a takeaway. So in addition to addressing the new definition of tolerance, we offer how to respond to it as a follower of Jesus. Another is the interview or personality profile. This is an interview of a writer, Rachel Phillips, right in the first paragraph, Bob. One of the things that always amazes me, you nonfiction writers, is that we gather at these conferences where there's 100 of us, and there are faculty who've accomplished things, and staff and conferees who've written things, and nobody sits down with those people and says, so could I interview you for 10 or 15 minutes and maybe pitch an article to Writer's Digest or to if you're a parent, to Christian Parenting or something like that, right? We're right here amongst peers that have stuff we could interview them about, and yet nobody ever does that. You should do that. At your next conference, plan ahead and think to sit down like we did in the radio interviews, to interview someone for a possible profile or interview article in the future. Yes?
How do I do that?
How do you do that?
I do that.
Oh, you do that. Tell me more.
I have a podcast. It's called Challenge Women to Stop Me. I interview other plumbers. And I promise you, at every writer's conference, every speaker's podcast conference, I walk away with it. I don't do it on site.
Right.
But I set it up and get their story so that I know that they're a good fit. And then I have a complete treasure trove.
Yeah.
For months.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's definitely something you should consider.
Yes. And what's the podcast?
Challenges Won't Stop Me.
Challenges Won't Stop Me. Great title for a podcast. So, yeah. So, okay. I take it back. One of us does that. The rest of us will be doing that. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for that endorsement. Okay. Another is the personal experience article. All right. Quick background. This was an article I did years ago, and it's one of my most published articles. So when I was growing up, oh, and by the way, personal experience is one of the most neglected forms of nonfiction writing, and yet there are magazines such as Guideposts and Mature Living and so on that are really hungry for personal experience pieces, right? They want those, but they have to, it's like pulling teeth to get them. Well, this was a piece that when I was growing up, we were the poorest family in our neighborhood in Cincinnati, Ohio. And yet, we had a cleaning lady and an ironing lady, right? And so it was always strange to me, and especially because when the cleaning lady would come on Thursdays and clean the house, and then on Saturdays, my mom would make me and my brothers clean everything the cleaning lady had cleaned. And then she would take ironing to Mrs. Murr's. Oh, and by the way, the cleaning lady's name was Mrs. Grubb. How great is that? But the ironing lady was Mrs. Murr's, and she lived in a tenement building close to downtown. And we would, I don't know for sure when the ironing was dropped off to her, but every Sunday on the way home from church, we would pick up the ironing from Mrs. Murr's, and my mom would take out every piece and iron it. And so my brothers and I would say, why do you do this? Why do you have Mrs. Murr's iron if you're just going to iron it again? Why do we have to clean when Mrs. Grubb was here? And she would say, she needs the money. So that was kind of a hidden or forgotten memory until one day, I tell it differently in the article just to protect the identity. But one day I had my son help me, my teenage son help me get our family bicycles into the minivan to take to a friend of mine had a bicycle shop in town. And he was hurting for business. And so as we're loading it in, Aaron said, Dad, didn't we just have these? Because I told him we're just going to have them tuned up. And he said, didn't we just have that done? And I said, he needs the money. And all of a sudden I realized, oh my goodness. My mom had given me a gift that I didn't even know she was giving me. But she taught me and my brothers how to give to others without them knowing, right? And so that's a personal experience article. And to answer a question from yesterday, I've also, about sidebars. Sidebar is a shorter article that often goes with a longer article. So some of the time when this article has appeared in print, when I've submitted it, I also submitted it with a sidebar, 6 Ways to Give Secretly. Right. So yeah, that's the personal experience article. Oh, and by the way, when I query the article, because If you use the Christian Writer's Market Guide, which is a wonderful resource that I use, I buy every year and use it to death. It lists magazines you can submit to, devotional outlets you can submit to, online outlets, etc., as well as book. The second half of the book is book publishers. But in the listings for each of those magazines, it'll tell you whether they want to be queried or have you send a full manuscript, and whether they prefer mailed in queries or email queries, right? Yes, Pam? What's that?
How do you subscribe to that?
ChristianWritersMarketGuide.com.
There's a 2024
copy,
several copies at Sears
in
the bookstore.
Oh, get yours in the bookstore.
You can get 2025 from the website.
Yes, and when you buy the latest Christian Writer's Market Guide, you get a one-year subscription to the website, which is updated more frequently, of course, because the print is the print. David.
I was going to say, when your claiming lady comes, offer them a meal.
Great. I don't know if we ever eat with Mrs. Grubb. I'll have to talk to my mom in heaven about that oversight. Yes?
Two quick questions. One, is the personal experience article, like, is that the same thing as a personal essay, or is that different?
It's pretty much the same thing. Okay. For a personal experience article, the takeaway is more obvious, more pronounced. Because in everything you write, there's a takeaway. Sometimes in a personal essay, it's implicit. It's more of a think piece.
And how does submitting a sidebar work? Is it something that they will ask for, or you just send it and be like, I have to pay for it?
Thank you, because I was about to say that. They will never ask you for it. So when you query about an article, you mention, you're pitching the article, the feature, the main piece, the personal experience article. And then in the nuts and bolts paragraph, which I'll talk more about tomorrow, you mention, by the way, I could also offer sidebars such as, and then I always give them two choices. Right? And then, even if they don't specifically invite the sidebar, but they say, yes, we'd like to see that article, which is usually the case, I send the sidebars along. Okay, so there's the manuscript that I send to them. I nowadays mostly attach it to the email, but then I'll also attach sidebar to the main article, by title. So, yeah, so, and I promise you, so quick story about sidebars. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, I was the editor of a couple of denominational magazines for the Salvation Army. And I had I would put out a theme list every late November, December for the coming year. You know, January issue is this theme, February issue is this theme. Because I had a dozen or 20 reliable writers who would submit to me. I remember their names to this day. One January, the theme issue was going to be the epidemic of teen suicides, right? That was much in the news, and so we were going to do a theme issue on it. About half the issue was going to be taken up. But I wanted a feature for that issue. And so Marion sent me a feature article, and it hit the mark. I sent the payment request to the finance department that day and bought her article, but she did not include a sidebar. The next day, Betty Lou, honest to goodness, Betty Lou, sent me a feature submission, but she included a sidebar. I'd already bought my feature. I didn't need Betty Lou's feature, but I bought Betty Lou's sidebar to go with Marion's feature, right? So very often, and that's happened to me too, when I've included a sidebar and the editor bought the sidebar but not the feature. And that's okay. I made a sale, right? So when you pitch it in a query And when you enclose it with a manuscript, you double your chances of making the sale. Okay? And besides which, when you say, I can also offer a sidebar entitled such and such, well, you're a professional, obviously. You know how this works. Yes?
So,
let me elaborate. A sidebar is not a condensed version of the feature. It's kind of a spin-off of the feature. Okay, so this is all about my experience, about what I learned and then what my son said, and it's that. And so, for example, the last paragraph, real quick, last paragraph or two, in that moment I heard not my own voice, but my mother's. I remembered how often she had used such words in reference to MERS and Mrs. Grubb, and the light suddenly dawned in my mind and heart. I realized then that without even suspecting it, my mother had taught me how rewarding it can be to secretly give to the needy. It's a lesson I hope my son has learned from me, just as I learned from my mother. Okay. The sidebar then was not a personal experience. The sidebar was an instructive six ways to give secretly, right? Slip money in their purse when they're not lurking, or do this other thing, and so on. So it's a spin-off. It's a further way to apply what the feature was talking about, right? Yes?
How many words would a sidebar generally be?
Usually 300, 250, 300. They're generally short, but a lot depends on what the magazine does, right? The outlet, what they prefer, and how long the feature was. So if the feature is 1,800 words, you could maybe go 500 in a sidebar, but yeah, it all depends. Yes?
Our personal experience articles, are they sometimes shaped by the writer's, like, their own worldview or assumptions? Because when you spoke about Mrs. Webb and the Iron Lady, I kind of pictured them as entrepreneurs, like she has her own thing in business, and that's why she's
Oh, okay. Yeah. The question is, are your personal experience articles shaped by your own worldview? Because when she heard the story about MERS and Mrs. Grubb, she saw them as an entrepreneur who had a cleaning service and so on. And yes, absolutely. Your personal experience is always going to be shaped by your worldview and how you saw things at the time. But that's the reason why we read personal experience stories, right? So, and in this case, having known Mrs. MERS, who everyone called MERS, and Mrs. Grubb, I wouldn't characterize them as entrepreneurs. I would characterize each one as a widow struggling to make ends meet. That's what it was. So thank you for that. Okay. Another and probably one of the most common and one of my preferred formats is the how-to article. And it can be surprisingly simple. You don't realize that the things you're doing, not everyone does. Or not everyone does that way. Right? So this is laughably simple. 10 ways to get the most out of a sermon. Right? But it sold, right? Also, another, for years I had prayed for my two kids using the fruits of the Spirit and Bible verses, Bible values. And I'd actually had on a card 31 different verses that I prayed for my kids. When, you know, the first day of the month is that they may be know the salvation that is in Jesus Christ. Second, that they may grow in grace. And then all the way to the 31st of the month, which is that they may have a heart for missions, right? And I'd done that for a few years before I realized I've never pitched that as an article. Not everybody does this, right? So that, like the Mother's Gift article, has become one of my most published articles. It's been translated into various languages, is an app, etc. Yes?
So in that example you just gave, would you write the article first?
No.
Or would you pitch it?
Thanks, Dave. The question is, would you write the article first or pitch it? I would pitch it first. I have many, many times pitched articles, well, almost always, I query them, and they're not written. Because when I query them, for a couple reasons, sometimes I've queried some articles, one comes to mind right away, that nobody wanted, so I never wrote it. So I didn't waste my time, right? But also because very often when I query, the editor will come back and say, oh, yeah, we'd like to see that, but be sure you do it this way. Or that you include illustrations from, you know, the church of what's happening now. Or etc., right? So sometimes you even get a little guidance or a little tweak that you wouldn't have put in if you'd have written the article first. So I suggest query, because you can write a query in an hour and send it out, and you know, you could send out three today and then one of them gets invited and then you write it. Almost never as an article writer do I get a contract. Well, nowadays I do, but early on, do I get a contract or payment until the article is written. But getting invited to submit the manuscript tells me, okay, there's interest here, so it's going to sell somewhere, right? So, okay, moving on, just for sake of time, the devotional or meditation. This is an example of a meditation. So there is no scripture verse at the top and prayer at the bottom. That's what makes it a meditation. It's basically mostly a devotional, but without the devotional format that devotional magazines and books and sites want, okay? But very similar forms, devotionals and meditations, okay? And there are some magazines that are not devotional magazines, but they want your meditations, okay? Then, question I got yesterday about the roundup article. So real quick, a roundup article, I love the term because it says what it is. In this case, I sent out letters to couples. I knew I wanted to write this kind of article about keeping love alive. And at that time, I was an editor on the War Cry of the Salvation Army. 10 Salvations share their strategies for making love last a lifetime. So I sent out letters with self-addressed stamped envelopes for a return response back in the day to people who'd been married 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years, right? And I asked just a few, basically I outlined my article in my ask of them. You know, could you tell me how you met and married? What has kept your love alive all these years? And what got you over the hump? And what advice would you have for people getting married today? Something like that, right? And then they responded. And I also asked them for photos of themselves as a couple. And so then I sat down to write the article, and I just took what they had said. I did an introduction, and then I wrote, okay, so-and-so says this, and I quoted them, and so-and-so said this. And then I went to the next point, quoting people, and I rounded up all those interview results into one article, quoting 10 people, taking the best of what they said, just excerpting the best bits, wove them together or rounded them up together, and I had my article. Now, only of the probably 1,800 word article, maybe 300 words were mine. The rest were theirs. I got paid for all 1,800. Right? So, why not? That's a roundup. When you take, and it can be two people, it can be 10 people, when you take other people's content and weave it together, round it up into an order that makes sense, there and then there.
Do you need approval from each person you interview?
Yes.
Put them in whatever your documents are.
Yeah, do you need approval? Do you need permission? Yes. In fact, usually when I do this, I'll say, and your response will constitute your permission to quote you. Mm-hmm. Right?
And you haven't signed that form.
Well, yeah, because they send me their, I have the letter. I have it. Yeah.
That was my question.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you do need permission. You need to be upfront about the fact, about what you're creating, what you're going to do with that. But you can say your response will constitute your permission. All right? Quickly. This is a Roundup article called The Male Mystique, but it's also a photo feature. A photo feature is an article that is dependent on the photos that support it. Okay? So they're not just captions, but the photos are so important to the feature that it wouldn't have worked without the photos. Okay? So, and this is the same kind of thing. I wrote a bunch of people whose mailboxes I had found around town and said, you're in it, your response and the photo you enclose will indicate that I have permission. Oh, no, I took the photos, but will indicate that I have your permission to tell the story, right? So, okay, and then just because we're running out of time. The seasonal article. The seasonal article. Magazines generally work 3 to 6 months ahead of time, some 9 months ahead of time. So right now, being March, they're working on their Christmas issues. So the time to query about Christmas topics is now. The time to query about Easter topics is in the fall, right? So, and there are seasons always come up, such as New Year's come up every year. So think ahead and query those opportunities. The seasonal article is also related to the anniversary article. So this was for the 100th anniversary of the Salvation Army Red Kettle. This was for the 10th or 20th anniversary of September 11. Okay, so think, okay, 2027 is coming up. What happened 25 years ago? What happened 50 years ago? What happened 100 years ago? What are the anniversaries coming up, whether it's related to the church or society or a location such as Blue Lake, and then query a seasonal article. The calendar article is similar to the 31 ways to pray for your kids. I also created the language of praise, which is 31 ways to praise God. Same idea, but it's based on a calendar. 31 days, 40 days for Lent, 50 days for Pentecost, Advent, etc. You can do the calendar article for many opportunities. All right. And I wish we had time for questions, but we don't. We're running just a tad late. So I'll take one question, one protest, one outburst. Thanks for that. How many words would you normally include for an article? When I query somebody, I always include the word length in the query, right? So I'd like to propose an article titled the Language of Praise that will run about 1,200 words, right? And could include sidebars such as this and that, right? So it depends on what outlet you're pitching it to. So most print magazines, a one-page article is going to be about 700 words, right? So that's what you pitch if you envision this as a one-pager. Two-page articles tend to be 1,200 words, and three-page, 1,600 words. So you pitch the length that you know this magazine uses, right? Knowing that your sidebar needs to be included in that word count. So if they never do anything over a two-page, more than a two-page spread, then you're going to pitch, say, a 1,000-word article with a 200-word sidebar, possibly. Yes?
Do those word counts include a picture?
You know, I said you'd get one question, and you... Okay. Do they include the picture?
Because we're saying that the photos matter a lot.
Oh, yeah. You'll get paid more for photos if they're high quality. But no, they have no relation to the word count, because it's up to the
page designer how they use them. So you can't dictate that. Yes.
Send the same query to multiple.
Yes, you can. These days, you can query simultaneous submission or query to multiple editors at the same time. Yes.
Line carbon copy.
I create a new email to make sure I make no mistakes. I don't want any misunderstanding and reply all after, you know, none of that stuff. New email for each outlet is what I do. So with that, I have to end. Thank you all.
Thanks, sir. Yes, sir. What was your question? You have multiple submissions at one at the same time, or two or three at the same time.